Well, hello everybody. I'm Andy, and I'm going to talk fairly briefly about all those things. It seemed like a good idea to do it when I first put down the talk on the wiki, but actually when I came to write the slides, I realized there was actually quite a lot to talk about in there. I'm not going to get it all in. So I'm going to gloss over some things, and if you have questions about them, then shout, and I'll do my best to answer the ones that I can. So what I'm basically going to talk about is scheduling and background tasks. Mostly background tasks with respect to having things running in a sort of scheduling-like way. I'm going to talk about those commands. It's sleep very briefly, just from a scripting and delaying something running point of view, for scheduling a job for a future date, cron really for scheduling regular jobs, things that are repetitive, and then no hop and screen from the point of view of background tasks. I'm not going to talk about no hop in any real detail, I'm just going to briefly mention it. Generally anything you can do with no hop you can do with screen, and I'm not convinced it has much of a place anymore, but it used to be the way that you would set a task running if you wanted it to run persistently over logout. Okay, so sleep is a pretty simple command. You sleep, and then you sleep for a period of time. You can use it, mostly it's used in scripts to delay things. If you set something running in a script and you need to pause before you go on do the next activity, you slick a sleep in. By default it uses seconds. But the latest all-seeing, all-dancing GNU version of it allows you to define minutes or hours or even days by using that prefix. So if you say sleep 90m, it would wait 90 minutes rather than 90 seconds. But you can also use it on the command line if you want to delay something on the command line. And you can run it in the background as well if you wanted to. So you could put an ampersand on the back at the end of that command to force it into the background, and it would sit there and do nothing. Now, that would then mean that in 90 seconds time you get hello popping up on your terminal, which isn't very useful, but you might have something more useful that you wanted to do in 90 seconds or an hour or whatever. The other thing is that the latest GNU version, according to the man page, and I've not tried it, allows for floating point numbers. So you could, in theory, say 2.57941 days, if you happen to have worked out what that is in a time period and knew you wanted that. I'm not quite sure why, it's just it mentions it in the man page that you can do that in the latest version. The at command that pretty much allows you to schedule tasks. It allows you to say, I want this to run, and I want this to run at this time. You can run your... Gosh, that's really horrible of me. Sorry, I just mentioned the word batch in there. It really should be script rather than batch file. I was obviously not thinking when I wrote that particular bit. But you basically at minus F, file name, script name, command, whatever, and then the time. The time spec I haven't gone into here because it's quite complex. You can do something simple like 15:22, and it will then run at 3:22. You can do tomorrow, or you can do plus N days. There's quite a lot of different options, and you really need to probably go and look at the man pages to work out what you want to do. If you just want a simple time, like I want it to run at 5 o'clock, then, you know, and tell me to go home, then you can do that. You can set it up at minus F, whatever your script that tells you to go home is, 1700, and it will run at 1700, and it will, you know, execute your commands. But you can do all kinds of other clever things with it. You can build up as many acts as you like queued up, in theory. There probably is some limit. I don't know what it is. It's quite large, certainly. But you can examine the act queue with ATQ. You can also do it with that minus Q, I think, if you want to. But ATQ There's another command built in, and it will list to you the list of scheduled tasks and what time they're due to run and give you job numbers for them. And then with ATRM and then a job number, you can actually remove things from that queue. That's the way you manage your list of at tasks. Because it's running in the background and it doesn't necessarily have a terminal attached, because you set it running, then you could close down your terminal that you had running and it would still run at 1700. It doesn't have anywhere it can necessarily put its output to. So it will send the output of the command to an email. Standard error output of the command will go in an email to the user that run the command. So if you wanted to have it, say, tell you to go home, you would either have to end up with an email with the output of your command telling you to go home, or you could do something clever and have it run some X Windows activity, so it brings up a dialog box or pops up a version of Firefox and loads, your personal homepage or whatever to remind you that it's time to stop working. The real advantage of it is it's quick, it's easy. You can just fire it off at the command line at job and it does it. The disadvantage is that it only runs the once. If you've got a task that you want to do every day, or every hour even, you'd have to build up your queue and build them up in your queue and set them going. You couldn't. It won't do repetitive tasks. And also, in addition to that, they're not going to be persistent over a power down. So if you shut down your machine, you lose your at queue. But it is quick and easy, it does work for simple scheduling. Oh, I want to do something at this time. Cron is a lot more complex behind the scenes. It's not too much more complex to use, but it's a lot more complex behind the scenes. And it will let you do a lot more. It allows you to schedule tasks to operate pretty much any time you want. The resolution is down to the minute, but other than that, it will let you operate pretty much any time you want to run a task. You can run it. You can run it on the first day of the month. You can run it on the first Monday of the month. You can do all kinds of crazy things with it. But there is a much simpler, that's the old Unix implementation of Cron, which did exist in Linux. There's a much simpler way of doing it now for Linux, which allows you to run scheduled tasks in a much simpler way, which I'll talk about in a minute. But typically it's used for anything you want to automate. So if you have log rotation, if you've got big logs and you want to build them up, I know there's tools like Log Rotate which do it for you, but effectively for these kind of tasks that you want to run, you can have it run every day and move files about. You can do it for alternating monitoring if you want to check that a task, that a process is running, a daemon is running, or that all your servers are running, operating correctly. You can use email reminders. And another typo I've just spotted, but never mind. You can do email reminders and things like that. Pretty much anything that you want, anything that's scriptable, anything that you can write a script to do and that you want to do routinely. And as I said, there are two ways of doing it. You can use the cron hourly, daily, weekly, and monthly feature, or you can build your own cron tab. If you're using the cron hourly, daily, monthly feature, then what you get with that is there's a series of directories in slash, etc., and they you put scripts into those directories. So you put a script into one of these, into cron hourly, cron daily, cron weekly, or cron monthly, and then that script runs hourly, daily, weekly, or monthly. It's pretty much that straightforward. There is nothing more special. Obviously, the script has to have the execute bits set, and it has to have the right permissions to do what it does and things like that. But ultimately, pretty much you take a script, you put it into that directory, and it runs. Now, if you find that you need to then know when it's running, I know that Ian in Brazier had a problem a couple of months ago where one of the servers that he was managing used to lock up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Between 4 and 5 in the morning, it would lock up and it would do this. Can't remember if it was weekly or if it was daily, but it would do this on a regular basis. It would just seize up and die. And in fact, the reason for it is because it was a Red Hat server, and the Red Hat servers run these jobs runs daily jobs at 4:02 and weekly jobs at 4:22. So what was happening is that this process that was in his cron tab directories ran, and it was basically overloading the system and locking it up, and then everything was starting to break down and die because of that. But they differ between the times that they run differ from system to system. So the place to look is acceptor cron tab. If you go and look in, if my computer will let me do this. If you look in acceptor cron tab, you'll see that there's a list of where it's running, what it's running and when it's running it. And I'll talk about this format in a minute. But basically, that's the list, that's the place to look, and that's the list to look at. It does vary. It's very easy to edit that. You can go in and edit that and customize it if you wanted to. So if you decide you need your daily task to run at 5 o'clock in the morning, you can change it to run at 5 o'clock in the morning. But because of that, you need to double check. You can't just assume that you're running these defaults, whatever they might be, whether it's a Debian, Ubuntu system, or it's a Red Hat, Fedora type system. You can't just assume that you're running these defaults. You really need to actually go and check if you care. If you just want the job to run daily, fine, doesn't matter. But if you want it to run at particular times, you obviously have to go in and check that file, because they can change. Now, if you're using cron tab, the big advantage of cron tab and building your own cron tab is that you can set it anytime you like. You can have a task which happens at 5 o'clock every day, which emails you and tells you it's time to go home, rather than just the one day. And you can define exactly when it runs. It's not, however, so friendly to use. You do have to mess around with that format that I was talking about earlier, where you're using number, space, number, space, number, space, number, stars, and other things. I've not seen a user-friendly GUI interface to cron. There might be one somewhere, but I've not seen one, you know, that pops up and lets you schedule tasks and then generates your cron tab for you. So you're pretty much stuck with using this kind of thing. You see that if you want just list what's in the user's cron tab, just cron tab minus L will list it out in the command line. If you want to edit it, then cron tab minus E will throw it up in your default editor, whatever dollar editor is set to. It will throw up the file in that editor and let you modify it. And the format it uses, the line format it uses, is the minute past the hour, and then the hour and the day of the month. Yes, Tony?
Sorry, just to say that the user's cron tab is different from the system cron tab.
Sorry, yes, that is correct, yes. The file in etc. cron tab is what is used to run etc. hourly, monthly, daily, etc. If as a user you type cron tab minus E, you'll get your own personal user cron tab, which is indeed different. And then after the day of the month, you get the month. So you can define, I only want this to happen on the 25th of December. And then there's day of the week, which is Sunday through Sunday. It starts at 0, runs through to 7, where both 0 and 7 are Sunday. So 1 is Monday, basically. 5 is Friday. So if you only want things to run on Fridays, you can have that happen. If you only want things to run on Fridays, which are the 25th of December, you can do that, although they won't occur very often. You can set that up in your Grontab by simply by saying, you know, day of month is 25, month is 12, day of week is 5, and then you'd only have it happen on when Christmas Day fell on a Friday, this task would run. That's the only time it would run. And then after all of those things, you put a command, whatever it is you want to run. If there's any of them you don't care about, you just put a star in its place. So you see down here as an example, there's a whole bunch of stars in there. So you just star out whatever else it is you don't want to run. So here, this will run at 29 minutes past midnight every day. It doesn't care about any of the rest of it. It's just 29 minutes past midnight every day. It will run this script, which is a Perl script, which actually mails IRC logs. It's one of the things I use on my server, and that's what the script does. It actually picks up an IRC log and emails it somewhere. But ultimately, that's running at 12:30. And then this one here, similarly, this is running at 11:30 p.m. On every Sunday. So it only runs on Sundays. It doesn't care about what day it is, except that it must be a Sunday. And what this does is it actually generates a mail which tells me that it's time to go to bed. mailX is just an application on the command line. So it's like I ran that on the command line. So it just simply emails out an email with the subject line bedtime and that file as the body of it. Sends it off to me. But ultimately, you can put anything you like in there. You can fill around with it to your heart's content. You can put any cron, anything you run on the command line, you can put in there as well. Regardless of how you schedule it, whether you're using the cron directories and the system-wide cron tab, or whether you're running your own user cron tab, there are a few things that are stuck, and that is that the user that schedules the task has to have the permissions to do whatever it's doing. I mean, it doesn't get around any of your permissions are still set. So if you try to edit files you don't have rights to or do whatever else, your task is going to fail. There are ways around this, but generally speaking, there's nothing available, there's no user interaction. It's got to be something which will run. It can take its user interaction from a file. As you saw in the previous example, I was piping data in using a file, and you can do that, but there's no user interaction available. There are really awkward tweaks that you can do to get it operating with X, or to have it fire up things on one of the consoles. One of the things that you reach to is Control-Alt-F1 or F2. But again, they're not really, generally speaking, the easiest thing to say is so that, there's no user interaction. It has to be something which runs and operates, completes. And again, as I've mentioned before, with other things, that because it doesn't know where to put your output, because your output is not associated with any terminal or any display, output get all stood out and stood error output gets emailed to the user. So it generates an email. When it runs, when the cron tab finishes, it generates an email. If there's no output, it doesn't typically generate an email, although there are options to force it to, if I remember rightly. That's pretty much scheduling, scheduling tasks. If there's any particular questions about that,
I think I remember getting bitten with cron with the environment issues. Is it the case that it doesn't go through your user start script there?
No, it won't. It won't. And you need to, if I can work out how to go back, it runs. It runs things as though, if you're assuming you're running them as a user, it will run things as though they run from your home directory, which is why here I've got full path specified rather than just anything else, because although it should start from really from home Andy, and then I could just run bin ICNPM, it's just safer to issue full paths for everything. And it doesn't necessarily, it won't necessarily inherit the environment that you normally use as a user. So yes, you have to be careful what you're doing in terms of environment variables. You basically need to not rely pretty much on things being set up and explicitly make your Tron tasks do what you want them to. So NoHub, as I said, NoHub is something that it's another one of those commands that has been inherited from Unix, and probably very few people in Linux use, I suspect. As it says up there, NoHub means no hang-ups, and it basically means that when you hang up, which translates to logging out in most cases, the task will stay persistent. It won't run. If you run something in the background using just ampersand to force it into the background, then when you log out, the task will die. But with this, you can force things to stay resident and continue to operate, even though the user has logged out. It's pretty straightforward to use, but really, I never use it anymore. I pretty much, whenever I want to do anything like this, I run it in a screen session, which I'm going to talk about screen next. And I guess there might still be good reasons to use it for some systems or some things, but if you've got screen available to you, it's just so much more flexible and easy to use that I would recommend using screen instead. So now on to screen. Now, I could talk for an hour and a half on screen, so I won't. I will run through it quickly, but if anybody's got further questions on screen or wants a demonstration after the talk, feel free to come and talk to me about it. Pretty much what it is it's a virtual screen manager. It allows you to run terminals. You can run multiple terminals, switch between them, copy data between them. They disconnect from that machine, log out from that machine, go somewhere else, SSH back into that machine, and reconnect to your screen that you were using before, and carry on using it as though you were still sitting at the machine. I mean, obviously it's only a console window, it's only a terminal window, it's not X, but you can then reconnect to it and use it as though you were still sitting in that machine and jump around between the terminals again. It's easy to invoke. The default invocation is just screen, and that's good enough to start it off pretty much. It relies on a meta key to give it all the commands you need to do to jump between things and control it. And by default, that meta key is control A. I generally don't use control A because I find that I'm an Emacs person and I like using control A to go to start of line. And although you can get around that by hitting control AA and it will then do that for you, it's just a pain. So I generally select another key and use another key, but the default key is control A. If you want to look at what screen sessions are already active on your machine, you can type screen minus list, and that will give you a list of screen sessions that are active and a unique ID for each screen session that's active. If you want to reconnect to a screen session you've disconnected from previously, you just use screen minus R and then the ID. If there's only the one running under the user, you can just do screen minus R and it will automatically pick it up. But if there's multiple screen sessions running, then you need to give it an ID. And if you've forgotten to disconnect before you walked away from one machine, but you're somewhere else, We used to use this quite a lot when I was working in an office where there were where we were logged into a server from one machine and controlling it and getting things to do, and then we go somewhere else in the office and we needed to do something on the server. We'd still be logged in at our desk, but we now needed to control it somewhere else. You can use screen minus RD, and the D forces it to disconnect the other user. You're still logged in as your user. You've had to log in as the user, so you've still got this kind of password protection on that user, hopefully, to stop anybody from disconnecting you. But assuming you can get logged in as a user, you can then disconnect the old session from somewhere else and reconnect wherever you are. And here are some of the quick keystrokes for using it. If you have a window and you want another one, you want a second window, you type Control A by default, Control A C, and that will create you a new terminal. If you cycle between them, it's just Control A space. Jumping to an individual number is Control A 0 to 9. You can rename the windows so that they have useful names, like I generally have a set of screen sessions. One of them will be named Pine, because Pine is my email client and it's running Pine. And another one will be IRSSI or Hanslug or something like that, because it's an IRC session. And Control W actually gives you the list of the number of the terminal and also the name associated with it, so you can then look at what's going on. And one of the really useful but probably underused features of it is you can mark and copy and paste text, which I'll show you in a second. But that basically means that you can move text from one, even if you're not in an X session where you can highlight it and move it, you can move text from one virtual terminal to another. Just by using the open and close square brackets. So if we have a quick look at if I just check whether or not I've got anything running, I don't think I have, but and in fact, I do. So if I just type screen minus R there, that throws me into screen. And then if I look at what I've got, I've actually got the two windows there. You can see at the bottom there, it's got 0 and 1. So I can cycle between them. And that's just meta key space to cycle between them. If I, for example, run IRSSI on one of them, which is just a IRC client, and then I cycle between them, you see one of them is still got the command line, and the other one is sitting in my application. Actually, the one thing that I forgot to mention on that slide is how you disconnect, and that is meta key D drops you back out, disconnects you from screen, so you're now back to the command line without running screen. And if I then log in somewhere else, I could then use screen minus RD to get back to it and put it back up. So that's pretty much the way it works, but it allows you to run things persistently. It depends on how much you use the command line, really. If you use lots of command line tools, which I do, then it allows you to run them persistently. You can log out, go away, come back, SSH in from somewhere else, and your sessions are still, you obviously, if you shut down the machine, you lose them, but otherwise your sessions are still there, and they're permanently running. Now, if I, for example, do that, and look at what files I've got in there. If I then wanted to take one of those files, it tells me I've gone into copy mode. I can then move the cursor up to wherever I want. Say I wanted to copy. Say I wanted to copy that block of text there. Move the cursor to where position, hit enter, and then just scroll down to wherever I want to finish it. Hit enter again, and it's now stored that data into its screen's internal buffer. And now, if I wanted to, I could move to another window. Now, if I can move to that window, it's not a lot of help. But if I then, say, move to... If I then create another window and run Pine in it, I can then, by using meta key close square bracket, paste that text into my email. And when you've got an X terminal, that's probably not a big deal, actually, to be completely fair, because you can just do it just as easily with X. But if you're running on a console without an X terminal, it's incredibly useful to be able to save that kind of thing and copy and paste it around. So it really depends on, you know, the position you're in and what you're doing. But that's screen in a nutshell. I absolutely couldn't live without it anymore. It would really change the way I use things. But obviously it does depend on how much you use the command line. It's a command line tool, and it depends on how much you actually run the command line. So finally, just to make Tony adjust the camera again, generally resources for this, the man pages for cron are pretty horrible and I wouldn't recommend them. The man pages for things like at are actually pretty good. The man page for sleep doesn't actually say very much more than I had on my slides, but the man page for at, if you want to look at the time specs for how at works, is actually pretty good. The man page for screen isn't bad once you get past some of the language that it uses initially. But actually, if you want to know what the options it, all the options it does, it's not bad. If you want to know more about cron and get started with cron, I'd recommend that URL. It's actually Red Hat based, so some of the information isn't quite accurate for all the other distros, but it's pretty good. And as it happens, it was written by Cog, who's just recently reappeared on the mailing list, but it's actually a pretty good introduction to talking about the way things work and how to do things. For screen, there's a bunch of different things that you can look at for screen. That's the actual official GNU site for screen. It tells you where to get it and how to get it and gives you some information on it. The Linux Gazette has an article on screen which talks about some of the things it can do and how to use it in more waffly text. And then there, that's actually a list of a primer demonstration type exercise, type this command, see what happens type thing, that actually goes through and shows you some of the features that screen has. And they're all, if you're thinking of looking at screen, they're all things worth looking at.